left off last week, we began to discuss the Tachas HaChamu, Erev Chatzeros. The whole idea of the Erev Chatzeros is that you take some food from everybody who's involved, who lives in that Chatzer, and you put it into one place, and that's considered to be now everybody's house. Once you have one house for everybody, then the whole Takana of requiring, of assering, carrying that area falls by the wayside. So that's pretty much what we do. The Mishnah tells us that you can do Erev Chatzeros, either everybody chips in literally and gives some challah, gives some matzah, or you can do it a little bit easier, one person is mezak on behalf of everybody else, and that's pretty much the option that we do. When we deal with it, Erev Chatzeros, a Chazal Masachin, that it has to be a certain amount of bread or challah, it has to be placed in a certain place, it has to be a certain type of food. So we'll try to go through just quickly some of the details and halachas that we should be aware of if and when we're going to make an Erev Chatzeros. Most of us are not making our own Erev Chatzeros every week. We have one that's for the whole community, but every once in a while we find ourselves that we have to make our own. So we'll just go to a place where there's no Erev and you want to make an Erev Chatzeros in an apartment building or in backyards or camping. I don't know, different things that sometimes you have to make your own Erev Chatzeros. So just some basics that one should be familiar with. How much challah, bread, or matzah has to be used for Erev Chatzeros? So the Mishnah says that you need the amount of a grogeres for each person, the amount of a dried fig for each person. But if you once you reach a point, let's say you have five people who want to be part of the Erev, so you need five grogeres. What if you have 1,000 people? So you don't need 1,000 grogeres. Once you reach a certain amount, so then that's good enough for no matter how big your community is. How big is that amount that you reach? That's a Muslim Bay Sudas. As long as you have enough bread and matzah there, that suffices for two meals worth. So that's good enough, and it doesn't matter how many people in the community. That's why whenever we make an Erev, we don't start to count heads and see, oh, could you please give you a grogeres and see how many grogeres we have? We always go for Muslim Bay Sudas. That's going to cover you no matter what. How much is Muslim based suddas? So we know that one sudda is either the equivalent of eating three or four eggs worth. That's a whole complicated sugya in Masechet Erevin. So Muslim based suddas is six or eight eggs worth. So how much does that boil down to? Lamaisa. We assume a box of matzahs is okay. That's the minhag olam is that a box of matzahs is sufficient. It's probably a little bit less than a whole box of matzahs. A regular standard box of matzah should be good enough. Whatever person is making an Erev with challah, so then you have to try to calculate approximately how much that's going to come out to. So, very, very ballpark figure in terms of beitzim. So, let's say even the biggest shear, the biggest amount is eight beitzim. So how much is eight beitzim? So a beitzah is approximately two ounces in volume of challah. So I don't know. You have to know. You ask your wives about how much is that boiled down to in terms of rolls. So I remember when I spoke to Richie from Butterflakes, not about Erevin, but about benching, about the Kazayas and Washington Shabbos. So he told me that an average pull apart challah, again, I don't know all the same, but approximately average pull apart challah, so each one of the pull apart parts is came out to be more than a Kazayas. So if a person has two of those pieces of pull-aparts for the meal, then he's for sure eating a suit to Shabbos of a kebetz al-chol hadeyas. There's machlekes in the Mishnah, how much you have to eat for suit to Shabbos. Don't do it every time, just time how much you have to eat for suit to Shabbos. Some say you have to eat a kezayis, and some say you have to eat more than a kebetz. So if a person eats two pieces of pull-apart chalas, that's for sure good enough. My wife is convinced that it's much less than that, and that's always that running. We've been having this machlekes for 18 years, just how much chal it is. So we finally went to Richard in Bachriya, so he told us that she was much closer to the Yemis than I was. Anyway, so if you try to make a cheshbon like that, let's say if two parts of a pull-apart, let's say a challah roll, one challah roll is probably somewhere between a kezayis and a kebetza. So if you have eight challah rolls, so that's going to be a little shy of 8 kibetzim. So I don't know, 10 challah rolls, 12 challah rolls, I don't know exactly. It's hard for me to make an exact calculation. Again, most people are not using challah. Most people are using box of matzah, so we assume that a box of matzahs is going to be sufficient. How long must this challah be intact for? How long must the box of matzah be intact for? So again, for us, we make it at the beginning of the Erev Pesach. It lasts for the whole year. We never have the shayla. But what if you want to make it using challah and you want to eat the challah on Shabbos? Is that all right? So the Gemara says, yeah, that's fine. As long as the Erev was intact during Ben HaShemashos. Ben HaShemashos is the beginning of Shabbos. That's when all the dinner of Shabbos kick in. So as long as it was around during the duration of Ben HaShemashos, even though somebody ate it afterwards, that would be okay. So this was a, it could potentially become a source of a problem. Let's say a person sets up an Erev an Erev Shabbos, and he makes an early Shabbos. So he sits down, he eats a Suda Shabbos before Benish Mashu, so he's eating before Shkia. So we've quoted him in the past, and as Machlekes 2 days in Tosfos, can you fulfill Suda Shabbos if it's not yet Shkia, if it's not yet Tzeis Kichavim? And our minig is Mikrodin, that it's okay, we pass it like one day in Tosfos, first day in Tosfos, Pesachim Tzaditas, that Mikrodin, one can fulfill Suda Shabbos, even be by Odiyom, as long as you become Shabbos. The Shabura quotes that there is someone Machmer to eat a Kedais, a Chal at the end of the meal, as a Chumar B'Alba. It's after it's dark. But Mikra, then we all do can eat even be Baud Yom. So let's say a person sets up an Erev Chatzeris that week, and he makes an early Shabbos, and he sits down and eats the challah for the Friday night meal. So he's got a problem. Because when Shabbos really starts, when the Surim really, really kick in, at the time of Benesh Moshos, the challah's not there anymore. The Masa's not there. The Erev's not there anymore. So that would be a problem. So that's what the Poskim write, that one should be careful when you make an Erev Chatzeris. Don't eat it for the Friday night Suda. You never know. It may be too early. It says it's always better put it off until Shabbos morning. So why should we eat it at all? Is there any Indian to eat it? So the Gemara Bracha says that whenever you use something for one mitzvah, you should always try to use it for another mitzvah. So one of the examples that the Gemara gives is that it's always a nice idea to make a motzeh for the Suda Shabbos on the bread of the Erev. So it's a good idea to use the bread. Again, we're not going to use it because we don't want to make a new Erev every week for the matzahs. But those who are anyway making a new Erev every week, they're using challah, so then it's appropriate to use it for the Suda Shabbos, but it's preferable not to use it for the Friday night Suda, push it off for the Shabbos morning Suda. That's where the minhag became when it comes to the Erev Tavshilin also, that people also have the minhag of eating the Erev Tavshilin. It's also Tama Akev, the Erev is kosher whether he ate it or not. But Lechatchila is a mitzvah to eat the Erev Tavshilin because once you start something with one mitzvah, so it's appropriate to use it for the next mitzvah. So the post can say, which meal should you use it for? So here, unlike the Erev Chatzeros, there's nothing wrong with eating the Erev Tavshilin at night because the Erev Tavshilin also has to be intact. Not when Shabbos begins, but the Erev Tavshilin has to be intact. Kolzman, you're still cooking an Erev Yontif. Let's say if a person was Makabal Shabbos early, and Yontif goes into Shabbos, you're allowed to be Makabal Shabbos early. Obviously, once they're sitting down to the Suda, nobody's cooking anymore. So since nobody's cooking anymore, the women bench left, all the malachas were done, so then you can eat the Erev right at that point. So technically speaking, whereas the Erev Chatzeris has to be intact when Shabbos literally begins, the Erev Tavshilin only has to be intact until the cooking is over. So there's really no intrinsic reason why you can't eat the Erev Tavshilin at night. Nevertheless, the minhag is, you don't want to get people confused. So people know the Erev is always put off till the next day. So nobody eats the Erev Tavshilin at night. You always eat it the next day. Even though Mikra din, there really is no reason not to. The whole reason of the Erev Chatzeris doesn't really apply to the Erev Tavshilin. And the question is, so which meal should you eat it at? So you eat it the first meal. It's a bol yelcha. Why should you wait until Shal Shinnitz? As I'm in again, as a European man, I don't know where it came from exactly. That my grandmother told me, you eat the Erev Tavshilin is always eaten by Shal Shinnitz. No, that's what they told you. That's it. Make sure people eat Shal Shinnitz. So there's no real reason why it's not for Shal Shinnitz versus lunch, whatever. Either way is acceptable. When we speak about the matzahs for the Erev Chatzeros, for the challahs for the Erev Chatzeros, so the Gemara tells us that you have to set aside whole challahs, you have to set aside whole matzahs. Why is that? We play Dr. Shalom, we're afraid that people are going to get into a fight. Because if you're going to, strictly speaking, as long as you have the matzah, they have chalim, and you know what it looks like, we're afraid that if you're going to let people give broken matzahs, let people give half-baked challahs, so then some people are going to give their nice challah rolls, and other people are going to give their half matzah that was already broken apart, so people can get into argument. Why am I giving a nice matzah? You don't give me a cheap matzah. So therefore, they're masakhed across the board. You have to give whole matzahs. You have to give whole challahs. What about the evet? You have broken ones. So it's ma'akah with the evet. Maybe some folks can say that since the takana was, the whole point of the erev is to make shalom. So we don't want to get into a fight over the erev. Can you imagine? The erev itself is going to bring a fight. The whole idea is to make it one big happy family. So we emphasize on the word happy. So if you're going to be fighting over who's giving a nice challah, who's giving a nice matzah, that's going to undermine the whole erev. So some say even with the erev would not be good. So the Gemara says that din only applies when you're walking around collecting matzahs and challahs for people. So then it makes sense. I'm going to knock on your door, you're going to give me a half a challah. You knock on the other door, he's going to give me a whole challah. It doesn't look nice. But if you're doing it derech zechiyah, like we do it, now I go to the store, buy a box of matzahs, and I'm mezakeh the matzahs for everybody. So now what if I open up the box and I see that half the matzahs are cracked? Well, who am I going to get into a fight with? The matzah company, who am I going to fight with? I didn't go around collecting the matzahs from everybody, so that din doesn't apply. Therefore, for us, this halacha usually doesn't play out too much. What type of a food is acceptable for an Erev Chatzeros? So here the Gemara draws a distinction between different types of Erevit. Sometimes an Erev is sufficient with any kind of a food. An Erev Tchumen doesn't require dafka bread. And sometimes an Erev Chatzeros, so the halacha is it has to be dafka bread, or halachli bread, matzah, something like that. Let's say a person puts, wants to put a can of tuna fish out for the Erev Chatzeros, that's no good. For the Erev Tchumen, that would be good. For the Erev Chatzeros, that would not be good. What about for Erev Tavshilin? So Erev Tavshilin is a funny halacha. Erev Tavshilin, you may need a combination of both. But to some, there is a machlekes at Tanoim in the beginning of the second berg of Beitza, with the sugis of Erev Tavshilin appear, as to when the Chama Masak and Erev Tavshilin, it means you have to start all the cooking and baking processes before Yontif, in order to continue on Yontif for the purpose of Shabbos. So what's the din? Does that mean you have to set aside the beginning of all the different processes? It means you have to start cooking from before, you have to start baking from before, you have to start everything from before. But you say, no, cooking includes everything. So we know that cooking and baking are different processes in halacha. So do we say that one process is good enough for everything? And you need for each specific one. So one Tana says that ain't ofen el ala ofoi v'mavashen el ala mavushel, that you have to start cooking from before Yontif, and you have to start baking from before Yontif. That's an Erev Tavshilin. So you need a challah roll and a piece of gefilte fish. You need a matzah and an egg. You need a baked good and a cooked good. That's one Tana. And the other opinions of the Gemara say, no, cooking is good enough. You put aside one egg, one gefilte fish. That lets you cook, bake, fry, whatever you want to do. You can do al smach that one piece of cooked food. So how do we pass in that loch? So it was a machlekes 2 days in Tosfos. I think Rabbi Tam in the Reeds. Rabbi Tam writes that he thinks we have to be machmir, like the opinion that you need a fia and bishul. And the Reeds says, no. The Reeds says a mikra, then we pass that bishul is good enough. And at the end of the Tosfos writes that the Reed was a nephew of Rabbi Tam, and he grew up, the Reed's mother was Rabbi Tam's sister, and he grew up in the Rabbeinu Tam's house. His parents sent him away to go learn by his uncle. So Rabbeinu Tam was not only his uncle, he was his Rebbe. So the rewrites that all the years that he grew up in Rabbeinu Tam's house, he saw Rabbeinu Tam making Erev Chatzeros and Erev Tavshilin with bread and with cooked foods. So then when the Re moved out, and now he's talking, he got married, he had to make his own Erev. So he said he felt very bad. He said, all the years I've lived by Rabbeinu Tam, and they used to make an Erev this way. So he says, Ani Libi Lava Divri Doidi. It's a very emotional tearjerker. He said, I didn't have the heart to violate my beloved uncle. Doidi is his uncle and beloved. I didn't have a heart to break his heart, to do what Rabbeinu Tam did. So I also started to do Zapter the Re. I also started to use a challah roll for an Erev Tavshilin, even though I don't really think it's necessary. So that's where the Minhag Yisrael came from. That's why we do it also. We also, if the Reed couldn't break his uncle's heart, we're not going to break Rabbi Natan's heart. So therefore, we add on a challah for good luck. But Me'ik and Me'ikah, then we pass, you don't need it. Me'ikah, then we pass like the Reed, like Rover Rishonim, that for an Erev Tavshilin, all you need is a piece of gefilte fish or an egg or a chicken or something like that. You don't really need a challah, you don't really need a matzah. So we do it Liyasa says. That's why I always thought it was funny. I think we spoke about this in Shul once, an Erev Tavshilin Shir. I thought it was funny that when the Gemara says in Erevin, it says in Gemara and Brachas, that you're supposed to make a motzi on the bread of an Erev, because you always try to use something for a mitzvah as much as you can. So when it comes to an Erev of Chatzeres, I understand that, because you're using the bread. The bread is the whole Erev. There is nothing. You don't put on a filter fish for an Erev Chatzeres. So then it makes sense. You should make a motzi over that as well. When it comes to an Erev Tavshilin, what do you have to make a motzi on the bread of the Erev Tavshilin? We task it against the Benetam. We task it in the Mikra, and then all you need is the gefilte fish. So I thought that the more correct thing to do is to make sure that you eat the gefilte fish for the shalashans. That's more important than making a motzi over the bread. So that's what we always try to do. I always try to be makpid, not just to eat the challah roll. That's what everyone does, to make motzi on the challah roll. That's important. But I try to make sure that I get the gefilte fish. If I'm nice, I give a little piece to everybody. But it's like lechem apanim. The Gemara says that they used to do, when they came to eating the lechem apanim, in the Beis HaMikdash, so the Kohanim would fight over how much they would get, and each Kohen would get a tiny piece, like the size of a bean. So the Beis HaLevi asked the Kash, he says, how can each Kohen get the size of a bean? That's less than a kezayis. And no one's yaitzi the mitzvah. So the Beis HaLevi has a shtekh Torah, he says, no, the mitzvah of Echilas Kachim is not as a gavra, that you have to eat the Kachim. The din is that the Kachim have to be eaten. So when is the din that I have to eat, like I have to eat matzah, I have to eat the foods? So then there's a din of ein achila pachat b'kezayis. I have to eat kezayis. But if the din is that the chefza is ton achila, the chefza has to be eaten, then you don't need each person to eat a kezayis, as long as the whole food is eaten. So the food was eaten. So that's the same thing here also. It's not a mitzvah to eat the Erev Tavshilin. It's not a mitzvah to eat the Erev Chatzeres. It's not that I have a mitzvah. It's that the kavod ha-mitzvah, the kavod ha-chefza shal mitzvah, is that it should be eaten. So man, ask him who eats it. So you can cut up the challah, you can cut up the gefilte fish. You don't feel bad if you're not the one who stole the entire mitzvah for yourself. So anyway, I'll get back to the story. So the bottom line is that unlike other kinds of Erevin, Erev Chatzeres has to be specifically bread or specifically matzah. when we finally have our Erev Chatzeres, we're all ready to roll. So then we're supposed to recite a bracha. So like we recite a bracha on any Erev, even though the Erev is on a midrabbanan. The Gemara says in Shabbos also, we do recite brachas on mitzvah. So presumably we're going to make a bracha on a mitzvah's Erev as well. The only problem is that you have to be careful that the Erev is really necessary. Sometimes we require Erev Chatzeres as a chumra b'yama. We'll talk about this a little bit later on, about apartment buildings. It could be that not every apartment building really needs an Erev. Not all. So tell us, don't need Erev. As long as you have a lot of situations where we tell people to make an Erev misafek, so you have to be careful not to make a bracha. You want to make a bracha when there's a real, absolute, bona fide chiyuv for reciting an Erev. Before the Erev, when you make an Erev, so not only do you recite a bracha, you say a text as well. Hadar Eruva, Yehi Sharalon, I don't know, the same way we have a text by Erev Tafshilin, Erev Tchumen, so there's a text that the Chazal instituted to recite. What if a person didn't recite the bracha? What if a person didn't recite the text? So then b'diyeva, the Erev Chatzeres is going to be good anyway. The reason why is the Poskim say is that Mikra did, let's say you have a bunch of people who live in an apartment building together, and they happen to all have the Shabbos meals together. They have all the challah anyway belongs to all of them. And you don't really need an Erev Chatzeres. We'll talk about that a little later on. You don't need an Erev Chatzeres because there's shutfim anyway in the food. So then that accomplishes whatever the Erev Chatzeres is supposed to accomplish. So to over here, if a person made an Erev Chatzeres and they forgot to make the bracha, forgot to make the nusa, forgot to do anything, so it doesn't matter. It's no worse than somebody who anyway was a shutf with somebody else. We all own the challah together, so then we don't really need an Erev Chatzeres. This is unlike an Erev Tafshilin. Erev Tafshilin, if a person forgot to say the whole nusa, so the poskim say it's not an Erev Tafshilin. What do you have? So you have a piece of gefilte fish in your fridge. Okay? You need more than a piece of gefilte fish in your fridge. You need a piece of gefilte fish that's been designated as an Erev Tafshilin. So if you don't, you don't have to say it in Aramaic, mumbo jumbo you don't understand. You can say it in English also. But it has to be some kind of an oral declaration. This is an Erev. If you didn't make a bracha, that's okay. Bracha said on the Akev, but the declaration, this is an Erev Tafshilin, would be critical. Whereas when it comes to Erev Chatzeres, even the declaration is not so important. When exactly do you recite this bracha? So here you have a machlekes poskim. It's a little bit shaky in terms of, on the one hand, we want to be yotzei the din of kol mitzvos mevarach aleihem over lasiyasa. You always like to recite the bracha before you perform the mitzvah. On the other hand, we have a rule that it shouldn't be what's called over the over. You shouldn't make the bracha too early. So how do you do that exactly? So the machlekes poskim. Some poskim say that you should make the bracha right before you do the zechiyah. I have a box. I went to the store. I went to Pathmach. I bought a box of matzahs. So I'm holding on to the matzahs. So now I want to be mezakeh the matzahs to everybody. So the emphasis is once I'm mezakeh the matzahs to everybody. So now I basically did the Erev already. That is the Erev. Because everybody now owns a share of the matzahs. So if I'm going to make the bracha after I do the zechiyah, so that's a little bit of like doing the bracha after you do the mitzvah. So some poskim don't like it. Some poskim say you should make the bracha right before you do the zechiyah. On the other hand, other poskim say, before you do the zechiyah, that's like over the over. That's like making a bracha when the tefillin is still in the bag. That's not really the mitzvah yet. So it's a funny mitzvah, Erev Chatzeres, because the moment of time is tough to pinpoint. When exactly is that mitzvah of the Erev being fulfilled? So there are different practices in the Echorim. I think what the minig of most people do is that I think that they're mezakeh first. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's what the minig is. You mezakeh first, and then you recite the bracha, and then you declare this as the Erev and Shoy. So I was going to say, let's say a person forgot to recite the bracha, so they could still recite the bracha until Shabbos. The Erev hasn't really started yet. The Erev is not really intact yet, so you could still recite a bracha. So the poskim question that, how could that be? If the Maisa Mitzvah whatever the Maisa Mitzvah Erev is, it's a funny Maisa Mitzvah. Well, let's say I made the Erev at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, now it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm just going to wake up and I'm going to say, oh yeah, I forgot to make the bracha, Shir Kedushan, Zahm, it's Erev. So usually you can't do that. When a mitzvah is happening by itself, so usually you can't make a bracha there. So the post can compare to a pigeon of Ben. If some Acharonim write that if you have a 31st day of the baby is on Shabbos, so you should give the money to the Kohen on Friday, and you should say to the Kohen, I want the pidyon ben to be chal tomorrow. Because the Gemara says you can make a pidyon ben, it's liach hazman. So the Marshal used to practice that way. He said that you give the money on Friday, and the pidyon is chal on Shabbos. So other Acharonim write that, in theory he's right, but in practice you can't do that, because how are you going to make a bracha? When are you going to make the bracha? You're going to make the bracha on Shabbos? So it's not a fact the morning on Shabbos when the pidyon ben is chal. You're not doing anything then.
You're going to make the bracha on Friday? It's not a zman mitzvah yet. So the bracha zishta nishta heres. How can you make a bracha on davar parech mi'avi? You have to make a bracha on a ma'isa mitzvah. So it's a funny idea that you made the erev v'tuchlach gift and you forgot to make the bracha, you make it later. So we don't quite understand it. That's what the achronim write. Yeah, you can make the bracha then. B'di'evet. But l'chadchil, you're supposed to make the bracha b'shas ma'isa, either before the tzchir or after the tzchir. So again, this is only assuming that you can actually make a bracha. For most of us, many of us, when we get ourselves into erev chatzeros issues, so very often it's b'tara safik, there wouldn't be a bracha anyway.
Can't say that it's like a bracha
shem nimshachas. That's a mitzvah, like a mitzvah nimshachas. Right, so that's a question. Mitzvah nimshachas, the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos has the idea of mitzvah nimshachas, like by putting on tefillin, by putting on tzitzit, sitting in the sukkah. Those are the three examples the Rambam gives. But there, at least I'm doing something. I'm not tying the tefillin out, but the tefillin is still on me. I'm not sitting down the sukkah, but I'm still in the sukkah. I'm not putting on the tzitzit, but the tzitzit is still on. So those, I understand the idea of mitzvah nimshachas. Whereas when I'm not doing anything, I'm just sitting around and the erev is in binchal and almost al yoinim. So it's hard to understand where the bruch is. That's what some discuss about getting married. They say the person forgot to recite the brachas, and now he remembers 20 years later he forgot to recite the brachas under the chuppah. So can you make the bracha then? So one of the chuppah writes, maybe it's like a mitzvah to mishachas. It's like an ongoing mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to constantly be in the state of being married. But my son, the Rambam doesn't say that. Even though the Rambam is the one who introduces us to the idea of mitzvah to mishachas, the Rambam of Chazishas writes beferish that if once you're Makadosh, you forgot the brachas, so it's over. I don't know. It's a hard idea, that idea of mitzvah to mishachas.
The other question is, if the mitzvah is the zikui, so why is making a bracha before the zikui over the over?
Yes, yeah, so some say, right, the zikr is not really the mitzvah. The zikr is just the technicality of because you don't really need zikhiyah. If everybody gives their own challah, so it's also good. So it's not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is not al zikhiyah's eruv. It's not al mitzvah's eruv. It's just that I need zikhiyah, because otherwise I can't technically have I don't have the bread for the eruv. So it's like saying, I'm going to make the bracha before I bake the matzahs. So it's too early. Once a person has the Erev, so where is he supposed to place the Erev? So here the Mishnah tells us that the Erev has to be placed in an area that's part of the Erev. So I'm going to make an Erev, but I'm going to put the Erev, make an Erev from Bergenfeld, I'm going to leave the Erev in Marshall Heights. That's no shackles to anything. So the Erev has to be in one of the houses that's being huta, it's being permitted by the Erev itself. We speak about being in one of the houses, so the Gemara tells us it has to be literally one of the houses. It has to be in one of the batim that requires an Erev. Sometimes you can have different structures in an area that don't technically require an Erev. They're not really part of the Erev. They're not Beis Diras. They're not a place where people live. So those, you shouldn't put the Erev in such a place. That became the source of a whole complicated discussion about placing the Erev in shuls. So the Pasha said to Varum is that you shouldn't put the Erev in shul, unless somebody mamash lives in the shul. Here, let's say, if you want to put the Erev in shul here, that would be okay. But if you have a haraya, we have mezuzah on our doors, we treat it as a base dira, because we use this for other things also. But if you have a shul that doesn't have a mezuzah on the door, you can use it right? Right? They still don't have it, right? No, this Rabbi Willig is a famous thing that he doesn't have he refuses to put a mezuzah on the door of the sanctuary itself, because he wants people to ask him, why is there no Erev there? So the answer is, because it's not your house, and you have to treat it accordingly. So if it would have a mezuzah, that means you're allowed to shmooze there, you're allowed to do business there, you're allowed to eat there, you're allowed to... No, this is a shul, this is not my house. So Hidafka refuses to put the mezuzah in. Most shuls have mezuzahs, even though they don't need it. Anyway, getting back to the story. So if you have a shul that's really not a base dira, nobody's living there, so then it's not really part of the Erev. If it's not really part of the Erev, so then how could you put the Erev there? So that's what some people say, you can't. You're not allowed to. So there are more rites, that there's an age-old practice in Europe that they used to put the Erev in shuls. That's where they would leave the Erev. We know this is a fact. We know that they're in Tzfat. You know, the old shuls in Tzfat. So you see there's a place there for the Erev. There's a special place, the shelf where they used to keep the Erev stored. And in Europe also, apparently, that's what people told us, that many of the shuls in Europe, they used to keep the Erev in there. So where did that come from? So all right, he thinks it's based on the following. This is part of somewhat of a complicated discussion we touched on very, very slightly earlier on. Is that there are different areas in halacha. We have batim, we have chateris, and we have mavuos. A mavui, remember the first mission, Erevin, so the Mishnah speaks about a mavui when you have a house that opens up into a courtyard, and then multiple courtyards open up into a common like alleyway, and that alleyway, the mavui leads into the Rishas Arabim. So the Mishnayis tell us that you just as there's a concept of making an Erev Chatzeros, namely all the houses joined together to make an Erev Chatzeros, what if you have multiple Chatzeros all opening up into one Mavui? So then you have to do what's called Shitufi Mavuos. And all the members of the Chatzeros, all the Chatzeros have to chip in and make, in effect, another Erev to include everybody into the one common Mavui. It's the same model. Batam at the Chatzeros, Chatzeros the Mavui. So just we shouldn't get confused. So we use a different term. We use Erev Chatzeros and Shitufi Mavuos. It means pretty much the same. There are a few nuances of differences between them, but conceptually they're pretty much the same. Erev Chatzeros and Shitufi Mavuos. So the Gemara tells us that if all you're doing is an Erev Chatzeros, you're just including a bunch of Batim into one Chatzer, so then you have to put the Erev in the Batim, because you're trying to be Mat to the Batim, so you have to have the Erev in one of the Batim, one of the Beit Diyus itself. But what if you're making a Shitufa Mavuos? You're not just joining together houses into one courtyard, you're joining together different courtyards to get into one big alleyway. So then the halacha is, then you don't have to put it, the Erev or the Shitov, we can call it, into one of the Batim. You can put it into one of the Chatzeros also. Because again, the idea is that the Erev or the Shitov has to be in that area that it's coming to be Matir. So when you Matir Batim, the Erev goes in the Batim. When you Matir Chatzeros, then the Erev goes into the Shitov goes into the Chatzeros. When we say that it goes into the Chatzeros, it doesn't have to be literally on the floor of the Chatzer. It could be in a structure in the Chatzer also, even though that structure is not a bias. So that's what the Rama writes, that if all we were trying to do was doing Erev Chatzeros, we're just trying to combine Batim together, so then you'd have a right. And we really, it would be inappropriate to put the Erev anywhere but a house itself. But that's not what we're doing, says the Rama. We don't just live three houses in a courtyard. We have multiple houses into multiple courtyards, into multiple chatzeras, into one big mavu, into multiple mavus. We're trying to combine a whole city. That's this tremendous mega metropolis of Krakow, all of three blocks big. So we're trying to make an Erev in this whole area. So the Rama says that we're no longer bound by the details that has to be dafkin abayas, because we're doing more than just Erev Chatzeros. We're doing in effect Shitif and Mavuos. So therefore the Rama writes, you can put it in the Chatz, you can leave it in the street, you can put it anywhere in the middle of the street, that would also be good. So the Rama says Madach, you can leave it in the middle of the street, so you can put it in the shul also. The shul is not worse than the street. When the halacha requires a bias, it's got to be a base dira. When the halacha permits it to be in the street, so then it could be in a shul. So why do we put it in a shul? Why did the minhag become to put it in a shul? So the poskim write that the minhag was because you want to make sure that the Erev is always accessible. If you're going to put it into one person's house, well, that guy goes away for Shabbos. So then the whole Erev is not going to be good. The Mishnah tells us in Erevin that whenever you make an Erev, you do an Erev Chatzeros, an Erev Tchumen, so the Erev always has to be accessible during Ben HaShemashos. If the only way for you to get the Erev is going to entail Chilul Shabbos, so then the Erev is not accessible. The whole point of the Erev is, this is where my food is. My food is, I can't get to it. So then the whole Erev is undermined. So the Mishnah has a long discussion in the third paragraph of Maseches Erev. And let's say a person puts an Erev in a big giant box. And now the box is closed, they can't get to the box. So is the Erev good, is it no good? So the Gemara starts to discuss, what do you mean the box is closed? Take the box and smash it, and open up the box and get the Erev out. So not so simple, you allow to smash a box to get the food out on Shabbos, complicated sugya. So that's the source of opening cans on Shabbos, that entire sugya. It's thanks to this Din Hilchos Erev that we have the sugya, whether or not you're allowed to open cans and bottles and containers and everything on Shabbos, that the Rishonim will discuss it in the sugya Erev and the sugya on Shabbos, about the person who puts the Erev in a sheet of table migdol, and now they can't find the key, so the only way to get it is to smash it open. So is that an act that's permissible? Is that burn? Is that tzayser? Is it makhul patish? Everything revolves around that sugya in Maseches Erev. So since we want to make sure that the Erev is intact, that you can put it into a private citizen's house, the guy's going to go away, and no one's going to have the key, so the whole Erev is going to be no good. So then if you put it into shul, they're not going to close the shul for Shabbos. They're not going to close down the shul, so the shul is always going to be open, so the Erev will always be intact. So there are different minhagim today, whether they'll leave the Erev in a shul or not. So there's some, I guess there's some places still follow the old minhag of Europe, they put it in the shul, and I think most of the Erev in today are not placed in shul. In Teaneck and Bergenfield, so the Erev is in Rabbi Neuberger's house, it's not in the shul. And we don't get involved in the Shabbos, the Ramah defends the old minhag. We don't get any involved. We put it in houses. I put it in houses. Then we run into a problem. So we have to make sure that the Erev is around at all times. So therefore, if somebody goes away for Shabbos, the person who has the Erev, so they have to make sure to tell somebody. They have to make sure that somebody has the key to their apartment. They have to make sure that we have easy access to the Erev.
Isn't there
It is in Bethera. It could be. Okay, so they hold like Tzfat. They hold like the Rama. Could be. I know in Riverdale. Rabbi Willig is machpul that he leaves it. It's in his house. It's not official. Yes. A different minhag. that Erev doesn't really affect us, because even if it falls down, so that Erev is still, so we're like the good old days, pre Tzvat, we're firmer than the people in Tzvat. We have an Erev in the house. I remember one year in the Heights, so we used to always have this problem that people would, we used to leave the Erev in Rabbi Rapp's house. He was the one who was in charge of the Erev, because he very rarely went away for Shabbos, because he was in charge of the Reuven Binyan. So the only problem was the Taka once in a while. He did go away, so I remember, usually he would give us the key or something, he would tell us whatever it was. So one time, I remember, it was a late Friday afternoon, and somebody came to the realization that Rabbi Rapp had gone away for Shabbos, and there was a little bit of a mix-up. He thought somebody didn't have the key, we tracked him down, no one knew where the key was, Kitza, so we realized it was 10 minutes before Shabbos, and there was, Lamaise, the air was no good, the air was inaccessible. I remember Mamish, literally, I think my wife had probably already been shlacht, so I was running around with somebody on the floor. We were running around collecting challah rolls, like the old days. Mamish collecting enough challah rolls. We grab a challah, then you have to be careful, then you got to give a whole roll. You can't give then the Mishnah kicks in, like we said before. So we're running around collecting rolls, make sure we had enough of the Erev. So we put it into one big bag. The din is that you're not allowed to be mechalek yeruvo. You're not allowed to have the Erev of some of it in one bag, some of another. It's got to be together. It's got to be one big unit. So we took a bunch of challahs, a bunch of rolls, and we put it into one big bag, and we put it down in my house. I said, Chung, this is the Erev. Everyone who ever wants to come and eat the rolls around the course of Shabbos, come and join us. But this is the Erev. So then, of course, when Shabbos was over, we ate the challahs over Shabbos. We ate them, because once the Erev is intact, and Benesh Moshe, then it's okay. And then next week, we added another key from Rabbi Raff to make sure that his Erev was around. When you put an Erev into a house, so it has to be a specific type of house, it has to be a Makom Dira. This is a little bit of a throwback to some of the Ninim Hilchos Mezuzah. Just as in Hilchos Mezuzah, it's not called the base Dira unless it's Dawad Amos by Dawad Amos. It has to be a minimum of 4 Amos by 4 Amos. So too, the house where you put the Erev has to be a minimum of 4 Amos by 4 Amos. That's usually not going to be too difficult. So the post can raise a shadow. But what if the house itself is Dawad Amos by Dawad Amos, but the room that you're putting it in is not Dawad Amos by Dawad Amos? That's more of a Mezuzah shadow. Is it Chayv Mezuzah? Father, Chamud, since it's designated to be such a small room, that becomes a complicated shadow. So those who know Rabbi Willard's house, the Erev is in the living room. It's not in the kitchen. It's not in the kitchen. The kitchen's less than Dawad Amos. So I remember when I was younger, so we used to have an Erev Chatzeris in our building in Riverdale. Originally, before there was even an Erev in Riverdale, I remember as a little boy, the first time I ever heard about the Erev Chatzeris, I must have been at maybe 5, 6 years old, that they decided to make an Erev Chatzeris in our building. So there were 4 from families at the time. So we made a whole ceremony. There was one of the people who lived in the building was, I don't remember, it was Rabbi Shear. He used to be the chaplain at Columbia for Columbia University for many, many years. So he used to, he lived in that building. So he was in charge of the Arabs. I remember he made a whole ceremony with all the kids, all the 4 families, how many kids were there. And, explaining to us what was going on. So I remember he held on to a box of matzahs, and they were he was zochen the box of matzahs for everybody, and then he put the box. And I remember he said explicitly, "We're zochen the box of matzahs for 3 of the families, but not for the 4th one. What's wrong with it? The 4th one's going to keep the Erev in his house. So the din is that the person who has the Erev in his house, he has left to be zochen on the box of matzahs. His mamash in his house. He lives there literally." So the whole idea of the Erev is that everybody should live in one house. So if I mamash live in the house, what do I need to share in the matzahs for? So that stuck out 40 years later. He made a point of that. But anyway, so he took the box of matzahs, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was $1, he said, something probably less than that, 1969 or whatever it was. So we had the box of matzahs and sitting aside. Right? So then a few years later, there was an Erev that was, every year the Erev pays, so they would redo the Erev. So then when they built an Erev in Riverdale, so then you don't need an Erev in the buildings anymore. So they stopped making an Erev. So then when some of the people in the building decided they don't want a hole from the Erev, whoever some of those people were, so they decided they want their own Erev. So now comes the whole shaila. If I don't want to rely on the Riverdale Erev, so then what I'm saying is that the Erev is not accessible. So now the Erev 2 blocks away maybe is no good for this building. It's complicated. So it's nice to see you make your own Erev, your own private Erev. So we used to make a private Erev. And the Erev used to be in our, the only person who cared about the Erev was in our house. I used to make the Erev, I used to keep the Erev in our house. So originally, I used to leave the Erev in the kitchen, in the closet of the kitchen, with all the matzah and all the food. I used to write on the Erev and try. So then when I got a little older and I learned this din about putting it in a mokum that's less than dollar by dollar, it's complicated, it's not a closet, and the whole story. So I moved the Erev into my bedroom. So the Erev, probably the only place in the world that had, I had the Erev sitting in my bedroom on top of my svarim shelf. It was more than, my room wasn't that much bigger than dollar by dollar. I think I measured it was dollar by dollar. So the Erev Chatzeres for 3901 Independence Avenue sat in my bedroom for many, many years. After I got married, so I think that Erev ceased to exist. I don't think anyone has been really Chaddish in the last 18 years. So that was the history of that Erev. The Gemara says, Mishnah says, Masech is needed a strange din, that when you put an Erev in a place, in a house, so you should always leave it in that house. You shouldn't start moving it around to different houses. One would think that it's a nice covenant. One, you will love the Erev next day, you love the Erev, so the Mishnah says, I shouldn't do that. You pay back your shalom. Because you're afraid people get into a fight. Because what's going to happen? You're going to put the Erev, you're going to choose to put it in Plony's house, and then next year we're going to take it away from him. So people are going to think, Plony's not such a nice guy, I've got into a fight, he stole the Erev. It's going to leave for bed, we don't trust him anymore. So, once the guy davens the Ilah, so he davens the Ilah next year also. Once he gets the schutz of the Erev, so he keeps on the Erev. It's not a din, it's not an absolute. I mean, it's a din, you're supposed to do it that way, read that Hashem, stand the Hakev. So let's say, like in this case, so for 5 years the Erev was in Rabbi Rapp's house, and this one Shabbos it's in our house. What are you going to do? Rabbi Rapp's house is locked, you can't do anything about it. But in the case where you can do something about it, read that Hashem, so it's preferable to try to keep the Erev in the same place, you don't want to be in the Shana. So I guess we gave you a little bit of an overview in terms of the make of the Erev part. Next week, we'll talk about what's called the Schiris Rishos, about what do you do with all the Goyim, or perhaps all the non from Jews, what's their role in terms of the Erev, how do we deal with them, in order to make sure we can carry that area. But, just in terms of Shiurim,